Hi, everybody. Good to see you. Give us just one more moment before we get started. Well, today we're starting a new module. Yay! It's our co-creating magnificent visions that stick and flourish module. It's visioning and then strategizing. Today's call, we're going to be looking at visioning. On our next call, which is in 2 weeks, I'm going to be out of town next week. I don't know if I told all of you, John and I, for the first time in 15 years since I was pregnant with my older daughter, are going on a proper vacation without our children. So it's a big deal. So anyway, we'll have our visioning class today. When we meet in a couple of weeks, we're going to look at what I call the energetics of new things, which is very important for us to understand as practitioners when we work on visioning and strategizing with clients. And then the call after that, we're going to look at strategizing skills, and you'll get different recorded demos and lots of goodies with all of that. Before we jump in to visioning, I wanted to make sure that I mentioned two housekeeping pieces. So the first is I think the team just sent out yesterday a reminder for those of you that are in the mastery of program, a reminder about certification if you want to opt in to certification. I'll say a couple of things about it. It's not for everybody. Like, it's not for everybody to get certified. And what I mean by that is some people just, you don't need it. You either don't need the kind of like added rigor that it holds you accountable to, or you don't need it on an inner level. And when I say on an inner level, is that for some of us, and I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing at all, for some of us, knowing that we went through all of the hoops and we did all of the things and we passed and we got the kind of stamp of like, yes, you meet these standards, if for some people, it can really help on an inner level to then have that confidence to put ourselves out there, to market, to charge rates that feel really good for us, etc. I remember at the end of a women's program that I once attended, or I once participated in. It was this intensive women's program at the end of the year, the very last. So it was in person. It was the very last retreat. The leader, one of my dear, dear mentors, her name is Elisa Starkweather. She looked straight at me and she's like, "Joanna, I know you want a diploma. That's gonna be important for you." And I was like, "Yes, give me a diploma." So anyway, that's a yes for some people, a no for others. But if that is for you, or if you want that kind of just added rigor, accountability of all of the requirements for certification, I do want you to strongly consider stepping in. It's not a ton. It's not going to like take up all of your time. The requirements essentially are to complete 18 coaching partner hours, and then to complete an additional 18 our coaching hours on top of that, either with volunteer clients or with paying clients, to listen to all of the class recordings if you haven't been here live and do all the homework. That's all of that is honor system, by the way. Just check off that you've done those things. The other requirements are there is a test, it's pass fail at the end. It's an open book, and it's most the quizzes that you're getting at the end of each module, 60% of the questions come straight out of those quizzes. What else is are part of the requirements? To submitting two recordings of your coaching. This is I think incredible added value. So midway through the program, you would submit a sample of your coaching, a 30-minute recording, and Inbal or Caitlin on the team listens and will make notes for you on each of the competencies that we're looking for ultimately to pass the final recording. And you'll get very specifics on like the things that you're doing really, really well. You'll feel really good after getting the report because you're going to see you've already learned so much and there's so many things that you're doing so well. And then because I am Virgo, I make my team be a little bit Virgo, and we do get nitpicky on some places to go deeper, to tweak, to level up, which I know you want. That's why you're here. You want to get to those details of those details. So there's you'll you for certification, you submit that recording, you get all of that feedback. And then at the end of the program, you submit a recording again. You don't get as much detailed feedback at the end of the program. It will give you kind of scores on your competencies, and then you'll know if you pass or not. Sometimes people don't pass on their first submission. And I just like want to normalize that now. It doesn't mean that you're not an amazing practitioner. It just means that we have really high standards and we know that you want us to hold you to high standards. So, should that happen, we will give you very specific feedback on where to make some shifts. And at no additional cost, you can submit another recording when you're ready. The other requirement, which I think is also just a goodie of the certification, is that you get four one-on-one coaching sessions with one of the coaches on my team so that they can model this way of sacred depths coaching for you. And so that you get to be coached, but also learn from the coaching. So it does take a bit of time and energy from me and my team between going through all of the materials that you submit and grading the test and listening to the recordings and providing the one-on-one. So because of that, the certification is an extra fee. But I've tried to keep it as low as possible. I lose money on it. Quite honestly, it's $600 for all of that. And you can pay that in monthly payments of $100 as well. So you'll have that invitation in your inbox if that's something that feels important to you. Does anybody have any questions on certification? No? Okay, great. Oh, I should mention one other thing. I think I mentioned this to you before, but just as a reminder, it doesn't all have to be submitted by like the last day of the program or anything like that. You've got time to submit it because I know life is very busy. Carmen.
Hi, good morning.
Good
So
morning.
I've been giving it like a lot of thought, especially with that conflict where I don't identify as a coach and I don't present myself as a coach. If this could be, if the certification, it's something that could have in my back pocket and have some value to it, but I still feel like I don't know if it's for me.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there is a way to, like, if I convince myself that is the best for me, that I can do it later? Or is this like the one time
No.
where,
So
because I'm in the program, I can get involved?
All right. This is the right. This is like one of those questions that my team does not want me to answer the way that I'm going to answer it. So I'll just get in trouble. But like the truth is that it's best to decide around now so that there's accountability. We're in the container together. You can get it done, etc. But the truth is that I will accept your application and your submissions whenever you choose to. So we have people that are already a year out and they're like, you know what? I think I want to do it now. It is harder a lot of times to get it together when you're not in the container, but absolutely, like this isn't a pressure, you know, you must decide in this moment kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah,
Thank
good
you.
question. You're welcome. Okay, great. The other, Kelsey's asking, the 18 personal coaching hours can be the same client. Absolutely. It can be the same client. It can be more sessions with your coaching partner, however you want to get those. Kim.
If we've never been a coach before, is there a time when it would be best to start doing those coaching hours as it relates to the curriculum?
Now. So if you haven't coached, so I'm laughing, just like lightheartedly invitation to you and everyone. If you're new to coaching, we are at the point in the program, and especially I'll say, like, let's get through the next module of visioning and strategizing, and then for sure, you have so many skills. Like you are ready, unless you really feel otherwise, you are ready at the very least with volunteer clients to start
Okay,
with them.
thanks.
Yeah, good question. Lisa's asking, can these be with our coaching buddies? Yes, absolutely. Julie.
Something I've been thinking about is I love when I see that somebody who has been certified as a Sacred Depths practitioner states that and calls themselves certified Sacred Depths, yada yada. And I find that similar to what you were describing, that feels really compelling to me, to feel credentialed in that way. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts about if I were not to do the certification, how I might also tie into my title. Excuse
You
me.
can absolutely, and I would be honored for you to call yourself a graduate, an alumni. We'll give certificate of completion of the program. I think somebody in this cohort asked for it, and I love that idea. So graduate, alumni, completed all of that, just not certified Sacred Depths coach. Yeah.
Great.
And it is an honor whenever I see that out in the world,
Of
that I see
course, I
people
bet.
doing that.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. All right. If any other questions come up, you can reach out to me, or you can reach out to Caitlin on the team. She's probably can answer even better any of the questions that you have. The other quickie thing I wanted to mention, you'll get some emails about this hopefully soon. I haven't written them yet, but you will get them soon. Just looking at the calendar. On November 9th from 12 to 1:30 Eastern, I'm going to host, it's the first ever, I've never done this before. I'm going to host a Sacred Depths open house. And what the open house is for anyone that's currently in Sacred Depths and for your friends. It'll be 90 minutes of, I'm going to teach a little bit. I'll do some training on a technique or foundational or a skill. And then we'll also have Q&A time. It'll be very much along the lines of what we do on our calls, but new material that you wouldn't otherwise get. And I'm doing it for a couple of reasons. Number one, just because I like to give gifts and bonuses, you know, to the people in my programs, because I appreciate all of you and want to give as much as I can. So that's there for you, just extra time and space and training and Q&A. And then the other reason is to just have an opportunity for you to invite anyone you know that you think might love Sacred Depths, just to give them a little taste of it. So, you know, I am not going to make any kind of pitch or sale or invitation or nothing on that open house. It is really just an opportunity to come together in a more intimate community. I'm not inviting everyone, just, you know, current Sacred Depthers and their friends to like have this opportunity to have this taste. And then any friends that, you know, loved it, that now we're connected and they can approach, you know, me if they want. And I'm not even going to ask them to, it's just kind of there. So anyway, I would be so happy if you came. We'll send the emails on that. It's the 9th, November 9th from 12 to 1:30 Eastern. And I would be so, so grateful and honored if you invited anyone you know that you think would love the experience. For this one, to keep it small, because I really want to keep it intimate, it's just current people in Sacred Depth. So your cohort and the cohort right before you that's graduating next month. Okay, so let's dive in, get my notes up. Co-creating visions, and not just any visions, but visions that stick and flourish. Because we all know about the creating the visions that just gather dust and then we don't do anything with them. So I always like to start this topic with this quote. It's from a book called The Magic Lamp by Keith Ellis. It's a old book. I've probably had it for 2 decades now, and it's a thin book, but it's a good read. And here's what Keith Ellis says. When people don't get what they want from life, usually it's because they don't know what they want. When people don't get what they want from life, usually it's because they don't know what they want. And one of the many roles or responsibilities that we have as coaches and as transformational practitioners is to support our clients in the right time, because it's not always the right time for clarity, but to support our clients in the right moment to get clear on what they want. And there's a lot to this that meets the eye if we're going to do this well. And I want us to kind of get really into the details of this today. The vision, in many ways, we can really see the vision at the heart of any coaching or any healing or any transformational work that we do. Whether it's a bigger vision, like one that's a few years out, or a vision that's more immediate, like a conversation with a team, or how to resolve an issue with a client, or how to, you know, bring on the next client or whatever it is. So whether it's a long-term, like, this is what I want my business to look like, or what I want my marriage to look like X years out or whatever it is, or just the next thing, you know, I want to go on a date. The vision of it is really at the heart of the coaching. A vision is kind of like a profile that becomes a guiding light, a place to aspire to, and a place to stay aligned with. Vision is a profile that becomes a guiding light, a place to aspire to, a place to stay aligned with. Visioning also sets the stage for personal, organizational, or social change. I'm gonna say that again. Visioning also is what sets the stage for change, whether it's personal change, organizational change, or social change. It is hard to change anything, whether it's a personal habit or a cultural understanding or structure, if we don't have a vision for that change. As a side note, well, I'll say this first. Without the vision, you'll find in your coaching that a client can kind of like wander aimlessly. You don't have a place that you're going, right? Same with even individual sessions, as we looked at like session by session. When we ask in the beginning, what is it that you'd like to receive? That's kind of like a mini vision, right? This is the vision we're going for, the change we're going for by the end of this session. So if we don't have some of those bigger visions, whether they're the longer term or the shorter term, the coaching can just like meander, and there's insights that come through or actions that come through, but it's not really getting anywhere. And as a side note to that, in our enrollment conversations, we want to support our prospects. We don't go as deeply into it as we would in the coaching necessarily, but in some ways we want to support our prospects to have a vision when we have sales conversations with them. Because without the vision, it's like, what's the impetus to move forward, to invest in the support and go after what they really want? Okay, so before we get into kind of tips, tools, techniques, best practices for visioning, let's talk a little bit about what can go wrong when you are co-creating a vision with a client and what you want to be aware of. If you are not visioning, if you're not using like all of the visioning tools available to you, the vision can end up being misaligned or not realistic or not believable or not truly desired by your client. And probably a couple times on this call, I'm going to get on my little soapbox about this. And so this is time number one, just to say like all of those marketing promises that we see in the industry, like create 7 figures overnight, you know, lose 20 pounds in a day, you know, meet your soulmate next week, whatever it is, those are often, I'm not going to say always, but often not realistic, not believable, and sometimes they're actually misaligned and just almost like telling the person this is what you should desire, when really that's not what's right for the person. And when visions are misaligned or not realistic or not truly desired or not really believable, all of that leads to not actually getting it done, getting stuck, not being motivated, feeling drained, or if your client is a get it done person, they get it done, but then they don't feel happy or satisfied as they're doing it or once they get there, or they've done it too quickly and it's a misalignment with their well-being and their natural rhythms. That makes sense so far. It's just so important. Gaia's asking in the chat, how soon within the coaching would one co-create the vision? I'm going to get there. I promise, Gaia, we're going to take a look at that. Now, all of this to say, well, and this actually starts to answer Gaia's question a little bit. We want to start from the get-go with an aligned vision. That is part of a strong foundation for the coaching. It is one of the first things that you want to take a look at, unless, as we've looked at before, your client is starting and they're in their personal season of winter, meaning for they aren't starting in spring where it's time to set foundations and look to the future, but they're starting in a moment where maybe they first need to grieve, or maybe there's something that they need to let go of first before they can fully vision what's next, or maybe they need rest or space for themselves first. You can create a mini vision on like what rest is gonna look like, right? Or letting go of a certain situation. So you'll still always in the beginning, at least mini vision, but for some people, you might need to work together a little bit to move through the winter phase or to get more towards the end of it in order to create a bigger vision. Like I said earlier, not all moments are moments for clarity, for like full clarity forward. That's as it should be. We are too light chasery and clarity chasery in our culture. There's a time for everything. Now, while it's important to co-create with your client a vision that's really aligned, what I do want to point out is that, of course, sometimes a vision can change as an individual evolves. And that's not because you haven't visioned well to begin with, right? It's because the client has shifted or grown or evolved in a certain way. So you want to be tracking. Also, sometimes what can happen in coaching is that you set out with a vision, you co-create a vision, and then somewhere along the line, the vision is no longer aligned for the client, but the coach hasn't caught that. You know, the client certainly hasn't caught it. And then you're together, you're still going after this thing that actually needs to be tweaked a little bit. Julie's saying in the chat, I love that during one of our recent calls, you really highlighted that not promising quick fixes is an important part of being in integrity. Yes, it's so true. And, you know, I just add to that for a moment, not only is it an integrity piece, but it's a success piece. Because the last thing that you want is either in your marketing promises or in your visioning to tell someone that they can do this overnight or this, that, or the other thing. How hard is it going to be to work with them then? Right? Like, that's a lot of pressure. So anyway, we'll get to the nuances of that in a little bit. One of the other places where things can kind of go off the rails with visioning is if we're not checking our filters. So maybe you want to build an empire for your business, but that's not what your client wants to build. Maybe your definition of the ultimate romantic relationship is a marriage, but that's not the case for your client. Right? So always check your filters to make sure that you're visioning in line with what is important for them. So The other piece before we get into nuts and bolts of visioning that I want to make sure we explore a little bit is that oftentimes visioning doesn't end up aligned or what the client really deeply desires because the practitioner misses that the client isn't giving themselves full permission to have a vision that they deeply desire. The coach misses that the client isn't giving themselves full permission to even have to vision into a vision that they deeply desire. And one of the jobs of a sacred depth practitioner is to hold the space for your client to give themselves that permission. And there's a lot of reasons why we might not be giving ourselves that permission. So let's do a little bit of inner work on this to kind of get to some of the deeper places around it. I'll ask you some questions for journaling. First question, when you were a child, how were you given or not given permission to vision for yourself? When you were a child, how were you given or not given permission to vision for yourself? And before you go to answer this question, I know you all know this, but just to say, we always look at these pieces not just for our own self-development, but because this stuff is going on for our clients and they don't sometimes even realize it. So we want to be looking for it and tracking for it and asking about it. How were you given or not given permission as a child? Take one more moment with that. Okay. And the next question to journal on, what did you learn or not learn from your parents about having a vision? What did they model or not model for you? And it can be parents or just anyone that had impact on you as you were growing up and in your early adult life, excuse me, adult life years. What did you learn or not learn from your parents or others about having a vision? What was modeled for you there? Take another moment, really think about it. I'll give an example. I grew up, my parents were both immigrants, and because of their immigrant experience, the vision, like what a successful life is and what you should want was very narrow. I think especially as Jewish immigrants at the time that they came here, it was like doctor, lawyer, like that's the vision, and not much allowed outside of that box, right? I don't know how, with all of that, I got to first deciding to become a curator and getting a PhD in art history and then becoming a ritualist and a coach. But it was like the permission was very narrow there. One more question, and then I'll read some of what's going on in the chat, and also I want to hear some voice-to-voice shares. So this next question is a really important one, for ourselves personally, but also in terms of checking our privilege when we're working with clients. I want you to think about this, because this question is going to be answered very differently depending on the type of privilege you've had in your life. How has dominant culture allowed or not allowed you to have a vision for yourself? How has dominant culture allowed or not allowed you to have a vision for yourself? Another way to think about that question is, what messages has dominant culture given you about your permission to have a vision for yourself and go after it, really believe in it? So Sarah, to answer your question about journaling within a session, every now and again we'll do journaling in a session. It's usually if I really will only pull it out if I think a lot about balancing out the four levels of learning and processing. So if someone has moved a little bit too much to the emotional, for example, and want to bring them back to the cognitive, and they're having trouble with that, then the writing can really help with that. But otherwise, I use journaling mostly as homework, as opposed to in session. At the end, towards the end of Sacred Depths, in the full program, we'll do a full session on different ways to use journaling. But like these qu journaling questions that I'm asking us here, I'm asking it because we're like in the group and I want everybody to have, but otherwise I'll just ask questions to the client in session. Right, I'd love to hear some of your voices. What's coming through so far? What's feeling important? What are you seeing either personally or from the practitioner perspective so far? Who'd like to share? Lori.
Hi. Interesting, the question that really came through for me was, what did I learn or not learn about visioning? What was modeled for me? And I've always known my dad was amazing, very poor, but yet, you know, no education, but yet was constantly learning and growing, starting new businesses. And I've always learned, okay, where did I go wrong? Because that was modeled for me. But then I think through this here, just recognizing I was very, very sick as an infant. And so there was a lot of overprotection and their parenting style. And so it's like, okay, no wonder I wait for other people to give me permission to do things. Yeah. I don't feel safe to get out there and vision for myself until someone tells me it's safe. It's like, okay, that makes sense. And I've not put that together yet. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, really, really nice work. I'm so glad you're putting that together. It's so powerful to see now you have choice to do something differently with it. Good.
Thank you.
Who else? What are you seeing either for yourself or what's feeling important so far practitioner-wise? What's resonating for you? Who wants to share? Lisa.
The thing I'm noticing is that it wasn't encouraged me when I was a child, and what I'm just picking up in terms of working with clients, we're all going to have struggles with visioning and being true to our hearts with the visioning.
Yeah. And that's, go ahead.
And how narrow, when you said about dominant culture, I'm going to say the media particularly, how narrow the vision of success is for anybody when we listen to the media. It's like, oh, it's growth and it's financial and it's doesn't come from the heart at all. It's just like so sad, really.
Yeah. No, this is why we're looking at all of this, because or else we can just sleepwalk through it with our clients in a way, and it's just these boxed visions that aren't aligned, that aren't tailored, that aren't like true to the real desire. Good.
Thank you.
Heather.
I know for myself, growing up, like visioning wasn't really encouraged. And when I did, you know, share some of my visioning as a child, you know, oh, those are just pipe dreams, or, you know, Heather, you just want to save the world. And I think with clients that I work with now, it's really getting them to see beyond their incarceration, or getting them to see beyond their record. Yeah. So that they can see the possibilities of what visioning can be.
Absolutely. So, I mean, visioning always powerful, particularly with the incredible work you're doing, Heather. I mean, it's what a sacred gift to give any individual, and then especially these people that you're working with, the gift of you get to have dreams and you get to have a vision. It's sacred is the word that comes.
It is really sacred, and it can be so powerful. Like, I can remember working with this one client, and, you know, she said to me at the end of our session, she's like, I never would have thought that I had to come to jail to find my freedom.
Wow. So powerful. Thank you. Nikki.
Wow, that's really hard to follow. mine is nowhere near as amazing as what Heather just described. I was very lucky. My parents always let my brother and I believe that whatever we set our minds to was there for us, but they came from not very well-to-do backgrounds, so they had very simple dreams and built their life. So they wanted a lot more for us. So they actively encouraged us. But equally, there was sometimes that concept of you still have to do the sensible things. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because I am working with a health coach for hormonal challenges. And what does the dominant culture keep telling us? Actually, in my morning pages this morning, I have a lot of anger at the moment that keeps coming out in different ways, like the migraines, the heat through the body, all those sort of things. But it made me realize that the dominant culture has me visioning that I should be a size 6, yet I'm 5'10" and I have a very broad skeleton. I'm not going to be a size 6, or I guess what's that, size 0 in the US, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, very powerful share. I believe every one of our shares is so important for the conversation. So I just want to say that. And yeah, this I think these two pieces that you're pulling on are so important, feel important for you. And then for us to recognize for clients, number one, is the vision that they're creating part of the dominant culture, like I should be this size or whatever it is, and being willing to challenge that to really help clients see if that is actually their desire or not. We'll look more at that today. And then I love this other piece that you're bringing up between the you can vision everything that you want, but you must also be sensible. And how do you find a balance even as we're working with clients, right? Because we want it to be realistic. If it's not realistic, if it's not believable, it isn't going to work. And there's a spectrum of sensible too, right? So we're wanting to track all of those things when we're visioning with clients.
No, indeed. So I'm a recovering accountant to do marketing at university, but my dad was like, no, no, no. And, 20 odd years later now, 25, 26 years later now, marketing is really where it's at. I've obviously changed career substantially since then, but sensible at a point in time. But as you say, what is sensible? Because it could be very sensible for that person.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Always coach the what based on the who. Good. I'm going to take Wendy and Juliana, and then we're going to keep on going because we still have a lot to look at today. Wendy.
Joanna, I wanted to say what an incredible technique, because I was thinking of visioning as, let's help the client figure out what it is that they're wanting, right, for the future, which obviously is a great tool. What didn't occur to me, however, and what Lori so beautifully demonstrated for us, is that visioning can also, especially with that first question, really help to shine light on our limiting beliefs that maybe we didn't even know were there. And I'm just... holy shit. Like, I'm high-fiving you so hard right now. This is an awesome, that's amazing. That's really fantastic. So
yeah, I'm so glad it's clicking. Yeah. It's such so much more, as with everything in this program, but like, it's really so much more than meets the eye. There's so many important pieces.
And Heather, thank you for wanting to be somebody that saves the world, because I stand in solidarity with you on that. Thank you.
Juliana.
I can be brief because I'm so resonating with what everyone else is saying. And just on a personal level, it was striking to me to really feel how not having visioning modeled, or not even like, there was no word for visioning in my childhood. How that inability to vision holds me back, right, from being able to do it, because my visioning that I did as a child was like in my imagination, right? I was alone in my bedroom, I would play, and so the visions didn't match where I was. A 5-year-old can't be a teacher, you know, it, so there's always like this disconnect. And then the other piece, I'm in the process of interviewing women and I ask them what's working in their life, what's missing, what have they tried, you know, like just some questions like that. And I'm noticing the cultural piece that most women are defining things either in terms of family or not family, you know? And so there are a couple of buckets and, you know, maybe some career success a little bit, but there aren't a lot of cultural buckets, whether it's gender or not gender specific, that we have to kind of place these visions in.
Absolutely. And that plugs back into, you know, one of the things I was saying earlier is visioning is what can help yield social change. Like we need that permission to vision in order to break out of some of the dominant cultural messages, institutions, systems, all of that. Organizations need it as well. Good. Vesica is asking a very good question in the chat. She's saying, how do you help others who have a limited vision expand theirs? I'm such a visionary and find others have so many limiting beliefs that keep them small. I love the question, Vesica. And also it's a big question that we're going to slowly answer over the course of many months. But I'll share a few things right now. Number one, just like we're doing today, starting to create awareness and work with clients to co-create awareness on the unhelpful beliefs, just that awareness alone can start to like kickstart things and new ideas and new possibilities. You know, as you've heard me say a number of times, it's harder to have a choice to do something different if you're not aware of it. But once we support clients to become aware, then they can make different choices. Now, sometimes it takes a little more work to make different choices after we create awareness. And that's why we're gonna look at befriending fear and rewiring negative thought patterns and resistance and all of those things to come. But hopefully that's enough to kind of get the cauldron stirring for you, Vesica. Okay. All right, so speaking of cauldron stirring, I feel like we've been stirring the cauldron. We've already looked at and learned a lot about visioning. Let's kind of get into some more nuts and bolts now. These are kind of like tools, tips, techniques, skills for effective visioning with clients. So, to answer Gaia's question, which we already kind of did, but when do we vision? So there are a couple of different times and places where we're gonna vision. It already starts, if it's one-on-one that you're having an enrollment conversation with, it already starts in the enrollment or the sales conversation when you're asking the client, what is it that you would like to achieve? What is your vision for, you know, why are you here? Why would you like to work together, et cetera? So it's already starting there. In the welcome packet, I always ask some visioning questions in the welcome packet. I'll ask, and you know, not like too extensive because it's hard sometimes for people to do on their own, although not for everyone, but you know, what is it that you would like to achieve in the first 3 months of us working together? What is it, if I'm working with them for a year, a lot of times I'll do privates for a year, what is it that you'd like to achieve in over this next year? I will bring it oftentimes to a first call. If we have time today, I'll share a little bit more about how I bring it into a first call. If not, we'll get to it next time. This is something I'm gonna toss. This isn't a truth with a capital T. So check it out for yourself. I personally, and maybe at some point, I will change on this. This maybe speaks to maybe some of my limitations on visioning, but I think it speaks to bigger human behavior mostly. I have never liked the what's your 5-year vision kind of question. Every now and again, like a vague, to do it not detailed, but like a little vague and general aspirationally for certain clients in certain moments can be really helpful. But what I find with most human beings is that can just get stressful and overwhelming to do a full vision of like, what do you want your business to look like in 5 years? Usually about a year, 2 years is the max on how far people can really see ahead from where they are right now. So further out in a general aspirational way, but it usually isn't, in almost all cases, not all cases, but in almost all cases, actually not very helpful for the coaching to look that far out. Again, not a truth with a capital T, just something for you to think on for yourself. Okay. Know the difference between a vision and a goal. Know the difference between a vision and a goal. A vision is usually something that's a little farther out, like not going to happen next week or probably even next month. It's probably something that's going to happen in a couple of months. In a year, a goal is a marker on the journey to that vision. A goal is a marker on the journey to that vision. So the reason why I'm making this distinction is because oftentimes where coaches can go wrong is that they jump to the goals before the vision is articulated. And then remember what I said, the vision is the guiding light. So then you're just randomly picking goals that aren't leading to anywhere. It's kind of like if you're in New York and you want to go on a road trip, but you haven't decided if you want to end up in LA or El Paso. So then you just like go, you drive to random places because you don't know where goals, right? Because you don't know where you're going to end up or where you want to end up. So as an example, sometimes I see in business coaching, you know, people jumping to a goal like, well, you should do an ad for this, or you should put together a 3-day event, or you should create a member center, I don't know, whatever the thing is. But if it's unattached to what the business vision is for the next year or two, it's just random busy work. Or sometimes with health coaching, it's like, you know, go on this kind of diet, like do paleo or lose 10 pounds or like whatever the goal is. But if you haven't defined what the actual vision is, how can you actually choose the goals? Does that make sense, what I'm saying? One more example. Choosing a goal of asking a raise, even asking for a raise, but what's the vision? What's the ultimate vision for the career, for where this person wants their career to go or their life to go? Not ultimate, again, 5 years, but like, what do they want in the next year or two? And then that will determine, is it asking for a raise? Is it actually looking for a different job? Is it a different position? You know, what are the goals in here? Okay. As an aside, it is helpful for sales to vision a vision versus a goal. A goal is will not help, often, not always, will not help a prospect see that they need ongoing help. They might think like, oh, I'll do a session or two and reach that goal. Whereas a vision, it's like, oh, it makes sense. I'm going to step into a container with consistent support. And, you know, there's things to work through, inner pieces and outer pieces and accountability and steps and strategies. Natalie.
Yeah, this part you're talking about, Joanne, is really good. And actually, it's a point of, I always question myself with the sales in a sales call. Like, if I don't have a sense of the vision, I actually don't even pitch the person, because I like it to me, to everything you're saying resonates on a strong level, because if I don't know what they're seeing for themselves, or if they don't have a vision that I can help them work towards, then what are we doing? And so I literally struggle, because there are times when I'm like, well, I don't know where to go with this. And if I don't know where to go with it, I kind of don't really pitch. So is that even a smart strategy? Because
I think it's a wise philosophy. And then the strategy would be to support the prospect on the call to start to get a little bit into their vision a bit more. I have a 5-hour, I've said this before, it's 5 hours, but it's a really good training on enrollment conversations. And we do a whole section on how to activate vision for prospects. So go to that, and I share questions and things to ask specifically for enrollment conversations that can help.
It's on my list. It's actually open on my browser. I just haven't found the 5 hours yet.
Yeah, I know. So do it in chunks. Don't think about it's 5 hours. The 5 hours is the vision. Set a goal. Okay. Next piece to consider, this is not going to come as a surprise to anyone, but still important to say, know the difference between a desire and a should. Know the difference between a desire and a should. As we already have looked at in today's call, it's already come up already. A lot of times we're motivated by shoulds, by what culture thinks is the right vision, or by what our parents think are the right vision, or by what our teachers thought was the right, or, you know, however success has been defined, or however health has been defined, or however beauty has been defined, or however a great relationship has been defined. But that's not necessarily the desire, right? So just examples. I mean, for some people, a coaching empire might be the desire, but for some people that's a should. And the desire is just to have a full coach. Not, I shouldn't say just, the desire is to have a full coaching practice. For some people, getting married is the deep desire, but that's again, like a cultural narrative. For some people, they may not even realize it at first. And that's part of our job, to support them to see that might be a should. And maybe the desire is a loving long-term partnership. For some people, losing X amount, like Nikki shared, right? Like losing X amount of weight or fitting into this size, that's actually just a should that they've never even questioned for themselves. And maybe the deeper desire is to feel sexy inside of themselves, or to feel good in their bodies. So how can we support our clients to know the differences between a desire and a should? Well, there are a number of different things we can do or ask. One question is, why do you want this? You want a coaching empire? Awesome. Why? Or on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you really want this? Or we can think about questions like, how exciting is this for you? Or why is this exciting for you? sometimes if we're listening closely and we can already see where the should comes from, we can ask a question like, whose vision is that? Is that your vision or somebody else's? Visions are products of the heart, not the mind. The mind is sensible, as Nikki was saying before. But visions are products of the heart. And so oftentimes this getting to the desire versus the should, to ask questions that activate the heart level of learning and processing. How does it feel in your heart when you think about creating an empire, right? Whatever it is. Where in your body do you feel the joy around blah, 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 whatever the vision is? For clients that are able to visualize, that is a great way to connect into the heart and then visualize from there. And one of the demos I'll be sharing with you is I did with a client on doing a vision as a visualization, where we really connect into the heart space for the visualization. So you should be getting that in the next couple of weeks. The other thing that helps tap in to the desire versus the should and the heart is that visions, you can use the word should. The vision, how do I say this without using the word should, since we're talking about not shoulds? It is helpful for visions to include the client's future self. Who are you becoming? Who are you stepping into? Who will you be when you achieve that? And you'll be able to tell from the answer, like if it's a should, that there's not juice in that future self. It's like flat and robotic or overinflated in a way that doesn't feel grounded. Having a sense of our clients' core values and priorities is also a really great way of staying on track with a desire versus a should. If we don't define our values, our needs, our priorities for ourselves, then it's easy for things to become misaligned from our hearts and what's true for us, and then instead base things on other people's needs or society's needs or values. So for example, if we know that one of our clients' top values is integrity, when we create that vision, we can compare it like to that value. Is there integrity in that? If we know that one of our clients' top values is freedom, we can take a look at the vision. Is freedom a value in there? Does that make sense? Okay. There's some inner questions that we're not going to get to right now, but definitely go through the resource sheets to go deeper on the desire versus should piece. Let me pause here for a moment because I just shared a lot in a short period of time. Anything that anybody wants to share on what's coming together around knowing the difference between a vision and a goal, or knowing the difference between a desire and a should? Vesica.
I know I raised my hand before you completely finished that sentence.
Okay. Go ahead.
I love it. I love, and I will be using it just so you know. A vision comes from your heart. And I so, so truly believe and know that to be true. And the difference between a desire and a shift, I love the way that you were actually, I see the process myself and helping people to really feel into where the vision lives inside of their body, what activates when they're thinking of the vision, what is it, what energy. So if they feel joyful is, you know, whatever their values are. I love that. Of course, like you won't actually do it unless it aligns to your values. So I love all that. And I find that I'm different than most people. And so in your future communication or training, I'm just curious if you'll cover this. I'm the opposite. I'm a visionary, and I really have struggled with bringing the vision into, I love that distinction of like my vision and then the goals, right? So how I get to the vision, and I can keep coming down in like a meta way, but I realize that I have a hard time. Well, let's just say this. Most people who I've tried to work with aren't visionaries like me. So they're not capable of seeing my vision or believing that it can happen. And I love this because I'm realizing I have a whole niche of people that I get to work. I can work with just from this. I'm realizing, oh my gosh, I want to help the women who have visions to have them become real because I can hold the visions for them. However, how do I break that down? Because I have tried to work with people who weren't able to help me break it down because they're not visionary. So how would I do that for a client? I feel like I know, but I'm wondering from you, you know, any insight and wisdom I appreciate.
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to acknowledge you are a visionary, Vesica. Like that is so clear about you. And so I just want to like acknowledge and celebrate that about you and all that comes with it. That my answer is wait till our strategizing session. Cause like first we like that is exactly like you're going exactly where we're going, but we need a whole session to look at it, because it's like then once we have this vision, what do we do with it? So we will get to all of the strategizing pieces, I promise. What I'll say for now is sometimes when folks are visionary like you are, you're actually really good. Like you are the one that's like, I have the 5-year vision and the 20-year vision and all of that. Like that is for you, which is amazing. But then the work is like, okay, I see that. And you actually already said it. So then what are the intermediary goals, or even like, what's the halfway vision to there? So we'll look at that more in strategizing, but that's like, that's what hopefully that will be helpful for now. It's like, okay, I see this out there. Now what's something a little closer to that?
Yeah, I totally appreciate that. And I realize as you're saying it, what happens for me in my body is sometimes I think, because it's like, I can say in the past, I remember a time where spirit just came into material easily. Like there's no time and space. It just is. And so I find that sometimes I feel like I should be able to realize that vision like tomorrow. And so I appreciate. And if that's a part of this is like how I actually work through bringing my own vision into reality and be comfortable with the time, be comfortable with feeling not the pressure, like I got to get this done. I'm so far behind. So it's being a visionary is very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll toss this for now and we can talk about this more after the session if you want. Just as you're speaking, what I think I sense could be valuable for you is like holding the both and without self-judgment. Like because you're so visionary, you can see how these things can be created and manifested. It does put a lot of pressure on, and then self-judgment when it doesn't like happen overnight. So how can you hold both at the same time? If that's helpful.
Yes, thank you for that. Thank you. I'm gonna do that. Thank you.
Good. Julie, it looks like you answered your own question in the chat. Am I getting that right? Or do you still have a question?
No, I think I'm good.
Thanks. Yeah, I think you answered it. Okay, good. All right, let's keep on going. We already spoke about this, but give another important piece is give permission, or not even give. That's even that, because it's not our permission as practitioners to give our clients, but hold space for them to give themselves permission to vision. And hold space for them to give themselves permission to break rules and expectations. Here are some other questions from the magic lamp that I really like for this one. What would I really want to accomplish in life if I were absolutely, positively certain I would do it? And you can adapt that for your, for whatever it is you're working on clients with. What would I like to accomplish in my business? What would I like to accomplish around my book? What would I like to accomplish in my relationship if I were absolutely, positively certain I would do it? Here's another question. What would I really want from life if I were absolutely, positively certain I would get it? Do you see how that allows for like more of a bigger vision to come through, more permission of like, if I really could, what is it that I would really want? What would you do that's totally different than what you're doing right now if you were absolutely positively certain it was okay? What would you do differently? Right? And that can be about a big thing, or like, what would you do differently about that team situation if you were absolutely positively certain it was okay? Right, here's another piece that you want to think about when you're visioning with clients. Make it a stretch. Make it a stretch. So your clients aren't hiring you to do anything that they could easily do themselves. It's kind of not fun to, as the practitioner, to help clients do something that they could easily do themselves. I mean, every now and again, right? Not everything has to be a stretch, but they're hiring you because it's a stretch for them, right? So when you vision, allow it to be a stretch. And my philosophy on this is doable with a stretch. Doable with a stretch. Back to like all of those inflated marketing promises and inflated visions, those are not always doable. So doable with a stretch. And I always think about, for this one, a book that I read many years ago by Cheryl Richardson called, I don't know what, but I'll find it for all of you. Anyway, she has an exercise in there called stretch, risk, or die. Stretch, risk, or die. And I love this exercise. So a stretch is, okay, this is out of my comfort zone and it feels a little stretchy, but just like a little stretch, like I'm doing a morning stretch, right? We want our visions to be, that's one of the zones we want visions to be in. The next zone is risk. I feel like I might risk something if I do this. Like this is feeling really stretchy. It's good sometimes for visions to be in that zone as well. Die is, I would rather die than do that. Like I would rather die than put my profile up on a dating app, right? So like maybe, so the exercise is, as you're looking, let's say you're looking at dating, with a client, right? And you have a sense that they're taking the easy route, like, oh, wait to be set up on a blind date, or I don't know, whatever it is. You can do stretch, risk, or die. So you can ask that, explain what a stretch is and say, what would a stretch in this situation be? And maybe they'd say, I will go to a, you know, singles evening. I don't know, I'm making this up, right? That's okay. And then what would a risk be? Well, a risk would actually, you know what, I wouldn't rather die than do that. Like a risk might be putting my profile up on an app. You know, what would the I'd rather die talking to that really cute person in the office, right? So, and then you can, so it's one of those, it's almost like a number question, like on a scale of 1 to 10, but it's putting into categories so that you can kind of help them see the truth from the story. Like, okay, this is in the zone that I just really don't want to do, but these are in the zones that I'm willing to consider. Make sense? Okay. On an energetic level, or from an energetic perspective, the more that we are willing to stretch as practitioners, energy follows energy, the more we're able to support our clients to stretch. If we have fear around stretching, we're going to be less likely to invite our clients to do some stretching. So with that, I will ask you, where is one place right now, any part of your life or work, where you could stretch or risk just a little bit more than you are right now? Where's one place where you could use a good stretch there? For every now and again, some people like live in the die zone, like they're constantly doing or trying to do things that I'd rather die than do this. Like those are people that really live on the edge. So when we do this work with clients, with those clients, sometimes it's actually moving them where it's helpful into the stretch or risk, with just being in the I'd rather die than do that zone when it's like really appropriate for them. Heather's saying at your organization, we call it challenge by choice. I love that. Ah, Sarah could do some more networking with therapists. Good, good to identify that. Yes. Okay, so we want it to be a stretch. And sometimes I will reflect a truth to a client when they think that they're not being stretchy enough and they're just not getting it on their own. I'll like straight up say, now I could be getting this wrong, so let me know. But my sense is that you're actually ready to think bigger on this, or bolder, or whatever it is that we're looking at. You know, and if they kind of, they receive it and they have that recognition, I might say like, what would that look like if you were 10 times bolder than what you're looking at right now? Or bigger, or whatever it is for them. All right, here's another element that's so important to the process. It's vital that both you and your client believe in the vision and that it can be achieved. It's important that both you as the practitioner and your client believe in the vision and that it can be achieved. I don't know if you've ever, this, you may have had this experience yourself or with a client or seen it in a friend where they come up with something and they just like, they're like, on the one hand, like pumped and excited about it, but on the other hand, don't fully believe that they can achieve it. If it's not believable, it's really hard to move towards it and to move towards it consistently, especially because growth doesn't happen in like, it's just always moving forward, right? We get stuck sometimes. We get a step back to move a step forward. So if we don't believe, not just believe in it, like the why, like the reason underneath the desire, but if we don't also believe that we can achieve it, it's really hard to keep the consistency of growth, the hard work of growth to get there. So what sometimes when a client visions something, and particularly if it's pretty stretchy or in the risk zone, I might ask questions like, so what are some of the inner and outer resources that you have that are going to help you achieve this? Or what have you already created that lets you know that you're able to do this? As a side note, this is really important for sales as well. So we don't want to have fake belief in prospects to get them to buy or generate like fake belief in themselves. It has to always be aligned in an integrity. But oftentimes, like as I'm asking a client about what they really want to create for themselves on a sales call, I will reflect back to them some of the things I've already heard from them that lets me know they are 110% capable and ready to make that happen. Them having that, like, oh, I could achieve this, the belief in it, if it's right for them to work with me, they'll be more likely to, because they are believing that they can make it happen. If someone doesn't believe that they can achieve something, they're not going to invest time and money and energy into trying to achieve it. All right, we have 3 minutes left. Share one more thing for now. Visions don't always come all at once, all in one session. Sometimes they need space. They need to kind of come in installments. Give it space. Sometimes it'll come together in a session, and other times it's homework in between sessions. Sometimes there can be a block, like the client needs to move into a different space, like literal like room than they're in order to vision. Sometimes the visioning can get too heavy and it's important to bring some playful energy in. So don't get attached to outcome on how it's going to happen. Use all of your wisdom and tools to support a client to like be in that right outer and inner energetic space. Okay. For homework, you have all of your resource sheets and there's some homework sheets. If you're working with a coaching partner in this program, instead of splitting the sessions this week, like half coaching session for one person and half coaching session for the other, take one full session this week and one full session next week for visioning. So, 'cause it needs more than, you know, 20, 25 minutes. Of coaching, at least. If you're working with clients, go through your client roster. And for each client, I want you to kind of do a little bit of an assessment. Are you clear on this client's vision? Are they clear on their vision? Do you sense that their vision has maybe shifted since you've looked? Are they connected to their vision? And then think about how you might wanna bring it for people that are, you're answering no to some of those questions. How do you wanna bring it into the work? All right, we'll open up for, I know we're just at time. If you have questions, we'll hang on. And Natalie, I know we said that we would talk about something separate and we've got time and space for that. But it, at the very least, before you hop off, just jot down for yourself, what are you taking away from our call today? And I'd love for you to share it in the chat. Natalie, before I get to your question, which is on a separate topic, does anybody have any last thoughts or questions on visioning for now? Sarah likes the homework. Good. All right. If nobody has any thoughts or questions further on visioning, Natalie had a question that I'm going to support her on. And if anyone wants to hang for that, please do. You there, Natalie? Oh, let me turn the recording off.